good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 135, Acting Like Actors. Last week, we heard from writers how Reed Martin and I are writing the next Reduced Shakespeare Company show. This week, we wanted to hear from and about some actors. We'll hear about what some RSC actors are up to this summer later in the podcast. But first, I want to introduce you to actor Bjorn Johnson. Bjorn almost became a member of the RSC back in the 90s. He's definitely one that got away. But since then, as actor, director, fight choreographer, producer, and acting coach, Bjorn has more than landed on his feet. We have so many listeners to the podcast, so many RSC fans who are always asking, well, I'm a theater major in college, and or I'm going to move to New York slash Chicago slash Los Angeles. So what did you do? You grew up in the Midwest, Minneapolis. Right. What was it always your plan to go straight to New York? How did that evolution work?
Well, I was in Chicago and doing college. I wanted to go to New York or something right away because I'd been out there as a high school student, and I'd seen Ben Gazzara and Colleen Dewhurst in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Wow.
And sat there at the end of the show with my girlfriend and scene partner, best buddy, another fella. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the same person. But literally weeping. Without being dramatic, I was so blown away. I literally couldn't get out of my seat. And the house manager came down to kick our asses out.
Right.
And he's like, you have to, oh my gosh. Would you like to go backstage to meet Miss Dewhurst?
Oh.
So we go back around to the stage door, and there's 30 people there. Something. She's bringing people in four, five, six at a time, and finally there's maybe 18 of us left, and she comes on. She says, you know, I love to see each and every one of you, but I've got friends I'm supposed to meet, so I have to go off. It's just so cool that she did that. So I'm standing outside of Charlie's on 42nd, right down the street from the Music Box Theater in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And it's now not Charlie's, it's something else. Barrymore's, I think, or something. But
Applebee's.
So sad. What's happened to Manhattan? So I'm standing there, and who's coming up the sidewalk? It's Colleen Dewhurst. So I step out, and I, because I'd already been an actor as a kid in Minneapolis and Chicago, and I'd seen celebrities and stuff, but she, like, you were talking about this happening with your kids, with my ex-roommate, J.K. Simmons, at your house. I was blown away. I was just blown away. So I stepped out to her and I said, you know, excuse me, Miss Dewhurst, I never do this, but I just saw you in Who's Afraid of Virginia. I can start weeping again. And she's like, well, let's go and, you know, what are you doing here? I'm waiting for my friend who's graduated early. He's coming down from Emerson in Boston. We're meeting here. And she's like, well, let's go inside. So I sat down. So, you know, from then I absolutely knew that any other idea besides being an actor was baloney. But my parents, bless them, wanted me to have college to fall back on. So inside my head, I pledged that I would go to college for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't pledge to myself to graduate. I was just going to give it 3 years because I figured that was time enough. And I actually ended up getting a couple of bachelor's degrees in the 3 years because I overloaded like crazy and just being, because I just did whatever I wanted to do. And I had do internships at the UN because my poli-sci advisor, Dr. Charles Ree, was the former ambassador to the United Nations from South Korea and the arbitrator of the armistice agreement between North and South Korea when he was in his 20s, this genius guy who knew everybody at the UN. So I was going out to New York during college every year.
And is that standard actor training to intern at the UN?
That is actor training.
Oh, okay.
You didn't do that?
No, I didn't, but I was a director. I got my MFA in directing.
So. Okay, because now I was about to feel bad about that. But I auditioned for Juilliard. I was getting a call back. I went down to audition for Circle, and they were so wonderful. I just felt like I fit there. I didn't know enough to know that I should go to my callback at Juilliard. I blew off my callback and went to Circle and Square because I felt like I fit there. And at the time, it was almost the identical faculty to Juilliard. We had just incredible people. Michael Kahn, B.H. Berry, Moni Akeem doing movement. It was a really wonderful program. So, then I was there.
So clearly you're a big believer in acting. actor training, but also continuing actor training. I mean, even as much as you're working, to still do scene study classes, to still work on your craft, work on your muscles. Is that fair?
Absolutely. You know, it's different here in Los Angeles than it is in New York. In Los Angeles, you know, we're working on television, and we're doing occasional movies, and you'll work for a day, mm-hmm. or a couple days, or a week, or maybe a month, or maybe a couple months, and then you're waiting for the next job. So it's so important to keep working out here, because it is a muscle. It's like being an athlete, and it's the frickin' Olympics out here, mm-hmm. and it's the World Cup all the time, and everybody else is really great. I mean, the talent pool in Los Angeles is really amazing. It's just amazing. There's great talent pools in other cities in the country too, but it's remarkable here because it's a mecca that people come to from all over the world.
Well, John Steinbeck writing about, you know, the Grapes of Wrath. People come out here because they think the streets are paved with gold. And in the case of, you know, if you strike it lucky in Hollywood as a sitcom regular, a big movie star, yeah. it's true in your case. I mean, it attracts. It's a big, powerful magnet.
There are people who go through the front door like that, but most of us don't.
Right.
You know, most of us it doesn't quite happen
right.
that way. More don't than do. So you have to be really preparing for the Olympics all the time, for that joyous ability to jump up and do it without thinking about
yeah.
it. And so being in class, being in a workout situation of some sort is vitally important. There is a lot of great theater that goes on here too, but it's very different because the theater that's done in Los Angeles is on this 99-seat theater contract, so nearly everyone has got a job they're holding down, or you have to go off for auditions. It's not like doing a regional theater where you're working, rehearsing 8 hours, then going home and working on a script and preparing for the next day and going to do it again.
And on this LOA contract, if I am understanding it right, you know, the actors are still going out and auditioning for television and commercials and movies and whatever, and if they get a job, they are allowed to say, I can't show up to the show tonight because I'm shooting late. And theaters often have to supply understudies. Is that your experience?
Understudies or you know, run around and figure something out really fast, which is often the case.
When you're not being an actor, in those times that you're filling between auditions and between gigs, you are not only a prolific director around LA, but you're a much sought after acting coach, and you have your own studio, and
yeah.
you've hired a publicist to help you promote all this stuff. I'm curious as about the decision to move from New York to LA. How did that happen?
Okay.
And then what was the evolution of all this other activity?
Well, the decision to move from New York to LA, I was in New York and I was doing that thing that you talked about doing regional theater and sitting in town and going out and doing this and that. And I ended up getting hired to do the original first national tour of Los Miserables, as my father refers to it. The only language he ever studied was Spanish, and it just always came out Los Miserables, and that's what it is to me, Diana. So I did Les Mis for 22 months. Which was great, because I got to go back and I bought an apartment in the West Village from that, which was a really great thing for an actor to have.
Mm-hmm.
And marvelous experience. But I kind of fell off of that list of people doing all the readings and stuff.
You were gone.
Because I'd been gone for
yeah.
so long.
Yeah.
And I was also I was getting great roles regionally, mm-hmm. but on Broadway, I kept getting cast as ensemble understudy. And... Well, I'm just going to be really honest with you and the audience. When I would go on for the parts, I would do great. I'd get a bigger reaction from the audience during the scenes than the actor was, and I would just feel like, what's wrong with this picture?
Right.
So, with the end of a romance, I thought this is the time to go. Mm-hmm. And I just picked up Lock, Stock, and Barrel and trucked out here, because I just thought what had happened is I'd gone up for a role in a show in New York, and the other guy got it. It was a role that you had to sing, you had to sword fight, and you had to act really well.
Right.
And I'd had one of those auditions where you walk out the door and go...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's it. And I didn't get it. And I ran into the casting director, and she said, well, the other guy had been a guest star in Star Trek, and one of the guy with the 49% of the money saw that and loved that guy, and he was in. You were great. I'm sorry.
Right.
And I thought, I got to get on Star Trek.
Yeah, right.
I got so I can go back and get to Broadway.
Hi, everybody. I'm Matt Walsh of the Upright Citizens Brigade, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company's podcast.
Where can you see the RSC? Well, the only place to see the RSC live this summer of 2009 is in Singapore at the Drama Center Theater from July 28th to August 2nd. But it is possible to see some RSC actors this summer. Here in Southern California, Dominic Conti is in a production of Bach at Leipzig at the Odyssey Theater in Los Angeles through the middle of August. Jerry Kernian has just started rehearsals for Titus Andronicus at Theater of Note in Hollywood. Jerry's playing Titus himself, and I think he will not be doing it as a cooking show. That production opens near the end of August, but Jerry's episode of the TV show Castle airs on ABC on Saturday, July 18th. On the interwebs, Dee Ryan can be seen in Home Birth, a short film she also co-wrote, and which also features Rich Fulcher from The Mighty Boosh. Check out Home Birth at the Upright Citizens Brigade website at ucbcomedy.com, where it's been the most viewed short film since it debuted 2 weeks ago. In Africa, John Keelty is writing and teaching the songs for a musical about Madonna's adoption saga. I don't think that's a joke, but I have to confess I'm not exactly sure. And in the UK, Rick Bland will be performing the sketch show Man and Mouse at the Edinburgh Festival from August 8th to the 16th. Aaron Crone is appearing at the Old Vic in London in productions of Winter's Tale and The Cherry Orchard. Those run through August. John Schwab and Michael Connor continue to write and record songs and videos as Film at 11. And together with Aaron Crone, Matt Rippey, Simon Cole, William Meredith, and Jack Bennett will be performing in a hootenanny at the Bedford Pub with special guest Ethan Hawke sometime in August. I'll try to put links to all these productions on the podcast page of our website, reducedshakespeare.com. And now back to Bjorn Johnson, who was telling me about how he went from actor and fight choreographer to acting coach.
Stage combat is really acting, but it's physical. And it works for all the same reasons that acting works. Plus, I already was an actor. Part of the reason why I think I did as well as I did with the fight work was because I got that correlation.
Yeah.
And if I, BH used to tell me that my talent at it was the ability to communicate that clearly to other people.
To act the fights, not just do the moves.
Yeah, well, and teaching the moves in a way that was clear to them in an actor sense.
Mm-hmm. I see, right.
I was coaching other friends a lot because of that. I was out here taking an acting class with... So I'd done coaching in New York some, just informally. Mm-hmm. I was taking class with Larry Moss for many years when I first got out here. It was a terrific, exciting class and an exciting, terrific teacher. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who turned to me one day and said... When are you going to start teaching?
Oh, interesting.
And I remember it was in...
It's a great benediction from also a much sought-after and famous acting coach.
Yeah, he's probably top of the game by anyone's measure at this point. And I remember distinctly it was April, and I thought in my head, and this all transpired in about 3 seconds.
Wait, you thought in your head?
I did.
That's what I thought. I thought in my head, I said head, because that's what I called myself when I talked to myself. I thought, I've got to say a time for myself that is... soon enough to have some heat to it, but far enough away that it's not too big an obligation.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And it was April at the time, and I thought, well, August starts with A. I said, I'm August. And he was like, oh, okay. And that's what it is. So I was really started my own studio.
Mm-hmm.
That was over 8 years ago, I guess.
Yeah.
And I've been there every single Wednesday night.
So when do you think you'll go back to New York, or will you? Or do you think you'll be staying here for a while?
Well, I have been working on, for the last three springs running, stage readings of Grumpy Old Men, the musical. And when we last did it last spring, it was with F. Murray Abraham and George Hearn as the two lead guys.
I've always loved F. Murr.
He can really sing.
Can he?
He can really sing.
That's
He's
right.
Not just an Oscar winner. he can actually sing. And also with Carol Kane.
Oh, wow.
And Mary Lou Henner did it with us this time. And Josh Molina, who was charming and wonderful. And Vicki Lewis, who is amazing. And so Grumpy Old Men has been going on. I'd love to go back and do that. I'm currently also co-producing a movie called Belle, which is about America's most prolific serial killer. I want to go back to Broadway very, very badly. Being in a Broadway show for an actor is the best job in the world.
Well, what impresses me the most about your career, particularly in the last year and a half or so, you know, because since the Reduce Shakespeare Company relies so heavily on, we believe strongly that in letting the props do the work.
Yes, you must depend on your props. They're never late and they're seldom hung over.
And you have now cultivated the same idea in that you let this great big red bushy beard do all the work.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
You have worked more. I've seen you more on camera in the last two or three years with this big, great big bushy beard, as they say in Hot Fuzz, in Mad Men, in ER, in commercials for lotteries and whatnot. I mean, this has really become a very marketable commercial look for you.
I'd like to think it had something to do with my talent, he said, withering. No, I'm kidding. No, it's been great. It's so red, and I think
there's something inside the beard. Yes, and that's helped.
I think what it was is I was playing Chekhov in a play called The Chekhov Machine, where I played himself, not like a play. Right. I don't mean I was. When I say I was playing Chekhov, I don't mean
you're playing the man.
Yeah, the guy.
The helmsman on the Enterprise. We know what you're talking about. Don't be an idiot. We're not idiots here.
And I had this great Romanian director, Florinel Fortulescu, who says, "Well, you're Anton Pavlovich, you have to have a beard." It's like, well, I'll grow a beard, but you know, we better be prepared for me to shave it off, because you know, if I get the occasional commercial, that might happen. He's like, "Well, we'll cross bridge coming to it." So it's like, okay, but he didn't say it in that broken English, but nearly.
Yeah.
And so I got a Tanqueray commercial. You can bleep that if you don't want to promote Tanqueray. I got a Tanqueray commercial, and they're like, "Don't touch the beard." It's like, okie dokie. That was January of 2005. I did 14 commercials that year.
Yeah. So I think that's the lesson we can take away from this podcast is that, you know, young actors, you need to grow a great big red bushy beard.
If I'd have known it would get me work like that, I would have grown one on my ass.
Wait, turn around.
Yes.
Oh, you have. Well done. Congratulations.
That's it for this week's Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your acting process via email to feedback@reduceshakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans at our website, reduceshakespeare.com. Just click on forum. You can also find us at facebook.com, myspace.com/reduceshakespeare. Become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, on vocal rest Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Sally Anley. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Matt Walsh, one of the founding members of the Upright Citizens Brigade. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 135 405ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.